I'm Manila Chan. You are tuned in to Modus Operandi, the show that explores the methods and patterns of foreign policy all around the world and the history that reverberates in our lives today. Now, on this episode of The MO, we'll explore the continent of Africa, the world's mine for everything from precious gemstones and diamonds to ever-increasingly critical minerals such as cobalt and lithium needed for modern-day tech gadgets. So who's cozying up to this still-developing region? Then later, Kenya's latest presidential elections were fraught with drama and debate, accusations of ballot stuffing and stolen elections sounding more like the U.S. 2020 elections than not. So who will lead one of Africa's top economies for the coming years? We'll discuss all that and more coming up. All right, let's get into the MO. The recent passing of Queen Elizabeth II has revived the decades-old conversation about precious gems being returned to Africa after what some describe as having been stolen from the continent during the colonization period from the 1800s to around the start of World War I. The Star of Africa diamond, which currently rests atop the scepter of the British royal family, is a 500-carat clear-cut diamond mined in South Africa in 1905. Its slightly smaller sister diamond, cleft from the original 3,100 carats, sits in the royal crown. But today, the minerals being mined in Africa are owned by what seems like just about everyone on the planet. They're in your cell phone. Lithium and cobalt, two vital minerals needed for every electronic gadget in the world. From your phone to laptop, your tablet, chances are pretty good that you have a little piece of Africa in your possession and don't even realize it. To discuss this, we'll turn to Kawala Hosseini. She is a PhD student in environmental science and engineering with a focus on the impact of resource extraction for low-carbon technologies at the Shanghai Jiao Tong University. Kawala, the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo, supplies some 70%, give or take, of the world's cobalt. Now, cobalt is an essential ore used in lithium batteries. China seems to be the number one contract in buying up this resource. Does this effectively also give China more influence in the country from a geopolitical perspective?
So, as you said, it's correct. DRC provides more than 60% of the global cobalt. This is, of course, a large share at the global level, and cobalt is extremely important for the global transitions towards low-carbon technology, and it's used in lithium-ion batteries. It's also used like in super alloys and other key industries that are needed at a global level. Actually, not only China, but also other foreign mining multinational industries are involved in the market. And for instance, Glencore is the major mining industry that extracts cobalt, and it's a Swiss-British multinational. In addition to this, there is China Molybdenum, which is a state-owned company, and it extracts around 10% of the total cobalt in China, in DRC. However, what is important to notice here that once the cobalt is extracted in DRC, 90% of it is then processed in China. So the largest procession and beneficiations of DRC happens in China. And this is not only affecting DRC, but is affecting the global supply chain for cobalt.
How many more years into the future can countries like DRC depend on cobalt as their main export? I mean, will these economies in Africa have to switch perhaps to another mineral resource to sustain their economies?
So the importance of the cobalt in the Democratic Republic of Congo will be significant also in the following years. It is actually projected, the demand of the cobalt is projected to increase with the years and to reach a peak around 2050. What can the other countries do is actually to start recycling cobalt and recycling it like from secondary resources and other, for example, used lithium ion batteries. And this will actually reduce the mining impact in Democratic Republic of Congo.
The African continent has been basically the world's jewelry store for more than a century. Is demand for precious stones, like diamonds specifically, is that still a core export for the continent? And what changes have been made in that industry over the years as it pertains to human rights and other working conditions?
So it depends, of course, of the country, and it depends of the resource that is mined in specific. There are claims that there was abuses in the mining industry, mostly like in the artisanal mining that are run like at a small scale, and where miners work without being regulated. And because the global low carbon transition needs an increase demand of critical minerals in which like the African continent is abundant, such as the cobalt, such as the platinum groups, such as like zirconium, rubidium, aluminum. All these minerals are important for the industries at a global level, and the African nation share a large like a percentage in the global supply chain. There were negative impacts related to the mining industries, but at the same time, positive ones, because countries in Africa that have a strong institutional framework actually are getting benefits from it. For instance, in Morocco, more than 10% of the mining industry represents the local GDP, and this figure is around 7% in South Africa. So we believe it's important to have a strong institutional framework and to integrate regulations and policies to make the mining industry more sustainable and more inclusive, so that the local communities can be protected and also the rights of miners.
Kaula, we know that Africa is the second largest continent on Earth, only behind Asia. There is a tremendous amount of land with what one must imagine is full of valuable earth minerals. Can you give us a sort of a broad sense of the mineral resource wealth of Africa?
Like as a continent, the African nations are rich in resources. And for instance, as we have mentioned earlier, more than 60% of cobalt is mined in the DRC. And if we think about like platinum group, more than 90% alone is mined in South Africa, in addition to a large share of manganese and chromium. And there are several minerals that we need in our daily life, that we will need for providing solution to climate change, because these minerals are used and implemented in clean technologies. The issue here is how we can actually promote the resource endowments in the African nation, and how we can lower the mining environment damages, so that the African nations can, in the modern time, avoid the resource curse.
And historically speaking, how much of Africa's resource wealth has actually gone to native Africans versus, say, international powers?
So historically speaking, as we might all be familiar with, in the old centuries, the African nation were attractive with their mineral wealth and also with their natural and human capital. And so many imperialistic countries have actually exploited African resources. Nowadays, the African nations are more aware about the importance of protecting their ecosystem and giving benefits to their local communities. For instance, the African Union in 2009 launched the African Mining Vision. The objective is to provide a series of guidelines and strategies to make their industry more sustainable. However, one key issue here is that actually most of the African nations, they export the minerals as ores, as concentrates, and they lack of the technologies that they can implement for mineral beneficiation. So what they can do in modern time is to integrate different technologies to process and to fabricate these resources, like from ores to the final products, and to have a major role in the global supply chain.
How are African countries working today to best use their natural resources for the benefit of their native population?
Mm-hmm. So one step, as we discussed earlier, is the African Mining Vision, which actually provide already a series of regulations and how and strategies on how to make the mining industry more holistic, more inclusive towards their local governments. Another step that was taken by several countries is to regulate the system, so to provide a sort of solid mining legislation that will, in a way, protect the mining resources from foreign attraction, in a way, and to make the mining more profitable for their local communities. Also, certain countries, like Botswana, for instance, they implemented a series of strategies to train local entrepreneurs and also to provide the local mining industries with a number of trainings and assistance so that they can be more inclusive to the local community.
Are there outside major players who are assisting in this process, and how or why?
So, because as we have talked about earlier, for the Democratic Republic of Congo, the major mining players are foreign industries like Glencore and KMOC, China Molybdenum, like which is a Chinese company. So they these foreign mining industries they feel the responsibility of providing some services for the local communities. Based on their claims, actually, Glencore, they announced that they set a number of provisions to train local communities and to provide medical assistance, to build schools for children, and also to fight malaria by providing some pesticides to the local communities around the mining areas. Also, the Chinese mining state-owned companies claimed that they are doing assistance to local communities by promoting education, scientific cooperation, and also medical assistance. However, it is very questionable whether these companies or this foreign assistance is really making a big change for the local communities, or it's rather exploiting the resources and damaging the ecosystem of the mining areas.
Lastly, how is this green energy push impacting Africa?
So green energy provides both opportunities and challenges for African nations. Opportunities because we could see that the resource endowments of the African nations can be beneficial to the economic growth, to build infrastructures, to provide jobs for the local communities. But at the same time, the challenges comes when these ambitions meet like a weak governance and political instabilities, and whether countries that are abundant in these minerals, they don't have institutional framework that can protect their mineral resources and their resource richness and endowment. So it is important in this regard for African nations to boost their legal system and to boost strategies that integrate more holistic and sustainable approach for the mining industry.
Kaula Husseini, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us today. And when we return, allegations of election fraud, vote tampering, and dare we say it, collusion. No, we're not talking about the U.S. 2020 presidential elections, but rather the 2022 Kenyan elections that saw protests and rejections of the results. We'll be right back to discuss Kenya on The MO.
So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
In Kenya, a hotly contested and contentious election cycle for two men running for president, Raila Odinga, the former prime minister of Kenya, and William Ruto, the deputy president, or some would call the vice president of Kenya. Now, according to local polls, the popularity of these two men seemed evenly split, with just a slight lead in favor of Odinga. Now, here's the twist. Even though William Ruto was the vice president of the outgoing president, Uhuru Kenyatta, the incumbent president threw his support behind Raila Odinga rather than his own VP. So with Odinga and Ruto nearly neck and neck in the polls, the extra push coming from Kenyatta, son of the very first democratically elected president of Kenya, gave supporters the impression that Odinga would take the victory. However, when results returned showing a Ruto win, violence broke out in hotspots all over Kenya. Now, claims of fraud, irregularities, bias from the election board, and even the high court. Raila Odinga took his case to the top, only for the court to stay the election results in favor of Ruto, despite 4 out of 7 election board members disputing the numbers. And now, William Ruto has been sworn into office as Kenya's newest president. So joining us to discuss the election drama in Kenya is Abayomi Azikawe. He is the publisher and editor of the Pan-African Newswire in Senegal. Thank you for being with us today. The election board returned the total number of votes that accounted for over 100% of the registered voters. Now, this raised a lot of red flags for Odinga supporters. Plus, there were a number of election board officials who dissented on the certification of William Ruto's victory. How do you read that whole situation?
Well, I'm not sure what the political composition of the IBEC, the Independent Boundaries and Electoral Commission in Kenya, what that is based on. There were 4 people who dissented from the results. And as a result of that, the political coalition headed by Raila Odinga has taken this issue to the Kenyan Supreme Court. Hopefully, in a few days' time, they will come back with a decision in regard to whether the elections were legitimate or whether the elections will have to be done over. Now, we saw this several years ago, where although Uhuru Kenyatta was initially proclaimed the victor, there was an order from the Supreme Court to rerun the elections. The elections were rerun, but the Raila Odinga said they were withdrawing from the race due to irregularities in the IBEC and also due to the violence that was taking place in the country, which killed and injured a number of people inside of Kenya. So hopefully this year, there will be a decision by the Supreme Court, which will be respected by the majority of the people in Kenya. Kenya is the largest economy in East Africa. It plays a very important strategic role throughout the entire region.
Even barring the contested small number of ballots that was, you know, over the number of registered voters, the Odinga versus Ruto race was already a tight one. Can you briefly summarize for us the platforms of these two men? I mean, what differentiated them? Why do they have comparable numbers in popularity?
Well, they both come, Uhuru Kenyatta, for example, comes from a political dynasty in Kenya. His father was the first political leader of Kenya. Oginga Odinga is the father of Raila Odinga, who was in opposition during the 1960s and early 1970s to Kenyatta's Kenyan African National Union. Incumbent president support Raila Odinga in this election, but it was not enough to give him a decisive victory. Perhaps there was a decision made after the previous election that Uhuru would support Odinga's election since he was barred from running for a third term. However, William Ruto did not agree with that, and he formed his own political alliance, which did quite well in the elections. He was declared the winner, although there have been disputes over the other issues. So, unfortunately, we decided courts, and hopefully the country will in the aftermath of the decision by the Kenyan Supreme Court.
The Kenyan High Court has just returned a decision to uphold the victory of William Ruto. Will we see more political violence in Kenya one way or the other?
Yeah, I think this is the correct decision. It took perhaps a week for the results to be announced officially. I think they wanted to make sure that they had everything in order before a public announcement was made. We can only hope, as has been proven over the last month, that the country will remain peaceful and stable. Otherwise, it's going to be very, very difficult for the people in Kenya to deal with the current economic slowdown that's taking place in the country. There's also a problem of drought in some parts of Kenya, as well as in neighboring Somalia and Ethiopia. It's very important for Kenya to stay stable so they can provide leadership for the current situation in Ethiopia, where you have an internal conflict that's causing a lot of dislocation, injuries, and deaths, and also in Somalia with the ongoing insurgency there and the need for humanitarian assistance. So Kenya has to be a leadership, play a leadership role in all of these efforts in East Africa.
Abayomi Azikawe of the Pan-African Newswire, thank you so much for joining us today. So as the UK closes a chapter of history with the burial of Queen Elizabeth, Kenya and many former colonies begin to write a new chapter in theirs as the world looks to Africa to help supply the global demand for minerals. That's going to do it for this week's episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you again next week to figure out the MO.